Good morning, you're listening to KUNV 91.5, and this is Neon Eden. I'm your host, J. Patrick Hooligan. You can read my columns in the Las Vegas Sun and Las Vegas Weekly. My co-host, as always, Tovin Lapan, reporter for the Las Vegas Sun. Today we're taking a break from politics to talk about the economy, although, of course, the economy will have a big impact on the November election. Joining us is the former chairman of the state's official economic forecasting body, the Economic Forum, and is the CEO of his own consulting firm, John Restrepo. Thanks for being here, John.
Thank you, Pat.
A little bit of good news in the national economy on consumer confidence today. That we're taping on Tuesday. Per a survey of more than 1,000 households by a group called Absolute Strategy Research, half those of working age are now without a mortgage and non-mortgage debt down 10 percentage points lower than the peak. And the percentage with no debt is up 10%. Supply of credit remains severely constrained, so I guess that's bad news. But house price expectations are on the mend. A sustained rebound in house prices could put a brake on deleveraging, transform the narrative for the U.S. consumer, and be a significant game changer for the U.S. macro outlook. It seems like consumers are feeling a little better now than they have over the last few years. Any thoughts about that?
Yeah, I think on the housing market side, I think there's clear evidence at the national level and at the local level as well. We'll get to that a little later, that the housing market has stabilized, the new housing market has stabilized particularly, and it's starting to see some pretty significant improvements in terms of building permits and those sorts of things. So that's good news. And so I think there's a general upward trend in the national economy. Of course, as you have, we've seen so far in this great recession that we're now, I know what the economists say, it ended in 09, but in my opinion, we're still going through it. You know, 5 years into this thing, or four years into this thing, the recovery has been kind of somewhat anemic, and as I call it, a two steps forward, one step back style recovery. So, but this is good news for us right now. The problem is we don't know those same statistics you quoted me today. Next quarter could be completely different.
Right.
This is the nature of the global economy with so much uncertainty in the world and what's going on in Asia, and particularly now in Europe. So, but overall, we seem to be heading in the right direction. Everyone recognizes there's going to be a V-style recovery. It's going to be kind of a slow kind of plodding recovery, but at least we're looking better today than we did a year ago, and last year was better than the year before, so we're moving in the right direction.
Mm-hmm. Now, I use this phrase deleveraging, and that's been a big part of this recession. Households had worked up so much debt during the previous decade or even several decades,
correct,
really. Explain that process to us and why it's been created such difficulty for the recovery.
Well, it started off with the old adage is that consumers, in terms of the purchasing power of consumers grew dramatically for the last 20 years prior to the Great Recession. And why did it do that? Their ability of consumers to purchase more was really not a function of income.
Because incomes were stagnant.
Incomes were stagnant
for middle America.
Just for inflation. The median household income has been pretty stagnant for 20 plus years after you adjust for inflation. They grew in their spending habits through cheap and easy credit. And that was manageable for a while, but it got easier and easier and easier as it went along, whether it's cheap and easy credit for consumers, cheap and easy credit for businesses, low mortgage rates, all that sort of stuff. What we didn't know was how cancer-ridden the subprime market was.
Uh-huh.
And so
in Nevada, we were kind of ground zero for
a lot of that stuff.
Because people's homes, they were increasing in value, and then they were borrowing against that.
Well, yeah, that happened all over the country. I think what was different for Nevada was we became, in a sense, victims of our own success. The Vegas brand, let's call it that, became very popular in the 1990s. There were shows on Vegas. There were reality shows. There were movies. Everyone wanted a piece of Vegas. Also, that got fueled by cheap and easy credit by Wall Street to build more and more real estate development, more and more casinos and resorts and sorts of things. Interest rates went down. The mortgage rates went down. You go back to the subprime. So there's this confluence of financial crack, if you want to call it that, that fueled our growth in large measure. That's all gone away. Now we've gone through the hangover recovery period. We're in recovery right now. So that's going to take a while to clean itself out. Now, it's interesting, the whole issue of savings versus spending, right? At the household level, it's better to have greater savings than spending. It's better to have a relatively high savings rate.
Mm-hmm.
And at aggregate level, too much savings is bad for the economy.
You
want people spending.
Because we need consumers to get out there and spend.
You need consumers. That creates job growth and creates more, more demand and keeps the ball rolling. So it's kind of
the paradox of thrift.
The paradox of thrift, essentially, is what it is.
This idea, tell us about in Nevada, we've had all these foreclosures and short sales. Do we know roughly what percentage, or if not, can you just talk about this group of people now in Southern Nevada who no longer have a mortgage? They've unburdened themselves because they gave up a home or they sold it through a short sale.
You know, that's kind of interesting. There are folks that have been living in homes for a number of years now, two and sometimes three. I've heard one case of almost 3.5 years without paying a house note, waiting for a foreclosure process to go through or a short sale process to go through. And in the meantime, they still have their income. Let's assume they haven't been laid off or not on unemployment. And so that's freed up cash. So what we've seen is, in a sense, an uptick, a consistent uptick in retail sales activity. Yeah. Part of it is the economy stabilizing. Part of it, a lot of families have disposable income they would not have had if they were paying their mortgages. That's starting to wind down a little bit. It's going to be interesting to
see. But then aren't there other people who they had some big mortgage they couldn't afford?
Right.
They were foreclosed on.
Correct.
Or they sold their house in a short sale. So now they've gone out in the rental market.
Now they're in the rental market. Cheap. So they're paying rent. So they're saving a bit of money because they don't have a house note. They have rent. So they have a little more disposable income, but they're still paying rent. So there's a lot of things happening. It's going to be interesting to see what happens to the retail sales collection, which have been pretty healthy the last year. After all this dust settles over in the next couple of years and people are back to paying real pricing for their homes, real rent, so to speak. And so we're not sure where that's going to be. One of the things that did happen to us, it did not happen in other parts of the country, last October, I believe it's Bill 284 passed the foreclosure law, and that dropped foreclosures dramatically. They dropped by 90%.
It made it much more difficult for banks to foreclose.
And we hear through the grapevine that the legislature is going to revisit that law and maybe remove some of the criminal penalties out of it and replace it with civil penalties and hopefully free up that foreclosure market a little bit more. So there's so much influence of how what the housing market is still going through that affects consumer spending and behavior and all this stuff. It's hard to use that to forecast from. We're not at a stable situation yet.
Because the banks start foreclosing again in earnest, now that will dump a bunch more homes onto the market, and people will, and prices will again soften, presumably. And then everybody who's underwater, now they start to say again, what am I doing? Why am I paying this mortgage? Why don't I dump my home or do a short sale? Where does it end?
I don't think that's going to happen, Patrick, because if you look at was going on prior to AB 284 kicking into place last October, there was a massive dumping. The banks know that if they start dumping, it affects their inventory as well, all their REO, or real estate-owned property that they've taken back. So it's going to be a measured release of homes. Just like
they want price stability.
Yeah, they want price stability. No one wins from a dumping. That's why it wasn't occurring before.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, remember, the banks are somewhat protected through the mortgage, PMI, private mortgage insurance, that you pay when you put less than 20% down on houses. Other factors in play that I don't see you're going to see a massive, massive dumping. So that kind of nuclear scenario mentioned, I don't think it's going to likely to occur.
Lucky us, I guess.
Yeah.
Let's talk about, we're going to get back to Nevada in a minute, but let's talk about some bright spots in the national economy. As we mentioned, this deleveraging, people have less debt than they had a year or two ago. Cheap energy. Corporate profits have been high ever really since the recession ended. Talk about some of this stuff.
Well, I think the big story here that we've not seen in 30 plus years is the rebirth of manufacturing, particularly in the Midwest and other manufacturing locations, particularly the Midwest. So the boom in manufacturing has been a real bright spot, I think, in the recovery.
What's driving that?
Exports. Demand for American products overseas, particularly from Asia. And it's softening now because of Europe, the European problems, and the China is starting to slow down a little bit. But it's been a pretty bright spot, the whole manufacturing sector. So that's been doing quite well. Cities and communities that are involved in tech and healthcare have done pretty well overall. They've recovered faster. And so there are bright spots, but you have to look at, and you hit the nail on the head earlier, you have to look at almost regional development, regional economic activity. We're basically a national economy made up of a bunch of regional economies. So it's sometimes when you talk at the national averages, it kind of takes away from what's going on regionally. In the Southwest region or the West Coast region, whatever you want to call the Mountain West, sometimes what the Brookings guys call it, that includes Nevada and believe, I'm not sure California's in their Mountain West, but that whole western region, there are pockets. Denver's doing well. California's coming back. Washington's getting better. Arizona's doing better. Nevada's still struggling. We're the slowest one. Again, we don't have a very diversified economy.
Okay, that explains why they're doing better. Talk about some of those other markets.
Well, you have a situation where you have relatively high levels of education. You have relatively good competing private and public higher ed systems. And you have a more positive image of by the general business community of those communities. We have to address the fact at some point that the Sin City image that we portray to the Western world does have a dark side to it in terms of attracting certain companies here. And that's not to say we don't market the Sin City, because that's kind of our bread and butter in a sense, but we have to have a second message out there. Yeah, we're this here, but we're also something, we are a good place to do business. And so that's what the governor's office is doing. The governor's office of economic development is trying to do, and what this new regional development authority is going to try and do as it gets formed. How do we mix that message up so that we are looked at more attractively and we get our assets out there? One of the things that happened last 2 weeks ago, which I thought was interesting, is the governor's office sponsored what they call a FAM tour, F-A-M, which means a familiarization tour, that brought site selectors in from around the country and said, how do you steer your clients to go to what communities? What do we have here? What don't we have here? Well, how do we get...
What do you mean by site selectors? Who are these people?
These are consultants that work for companies that say, okay, we want to establish a new factory, a new operation out in the West, for example. Help us pick a location. So okay. They're site selection specialists. Some of them are internal to the company. Oftentimes, they're consulting firms that steer economic activity. So those FAM tours, they're popular around the country. We're going to try and do those twice a year. Bring these guys in, fly them around in a helicopter for a couple of days, let them see all the assets that we have here.
And the governor's office of
is sponsoring some of that, as well as the private sector is also sponsoring some of those trips as well. Yeah.
Do we know what the reaction was?
Yeah, the last one, the reaction was pretty good. The main reaction was, wow, we didn't know you had all these assets here.
Mm-hmm.
We think of you guys as the Strip.
Mm-hmm.
And we think of you guys as portrayed in movies like The Hangover.
Right.
That's what we think of Las Vegas. Oh, my God, I didn't realize you had these large-scale master plan communities. You have a pretty up-to-date infrastructure. We mm-hmm. talked about the switch facility. The road infrastructure is good. Housing is relatively affordable.
It's all pretty new.
You have Red Rock, the recreational activities, all that outside recreational activities. They had no idea.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really an eye-opener for them. And unfortunately, we haven't been selling that story. I got to be honest with you. For most of my 24 years, the pitch for Southern Nevada in terms of economic development was, California, you're lousy, we're not.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
mm-hmm.
You've written stories on that. That's not been particularly successful. Now we're promoting the assets of Southern Nevada as opposed to beating up on California.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we are sitting at, I think the report came out last week, like 12%, 12.1%, like a slight uptick in unemployment here in Nevada. And where do you see the most prospect for expanding our, you know, the diversity of our economy? Mm-hmm. If growth's not going to come from those typical areas that we saw in the past, where does Nevada have some stake where they could, you know, some competitive advantage that we could play off of?
Yeah, first let me get a little numbers geeky with you. We kind of are a little hesitant or a little sanguine about talking about the unemployment rate, because it is driven by a household survey. And for example, if you guys are unemployed but you're not looking for a job because you've given up and you get called, you don't show up in the unemployment rate.
Mm-hmm.
If you're looking for a job but don't have one, you show up in the unemployment rate. So we prefer to look at month over month, year over year job growth numbers. And those are stabilizing. They've been pretty stable for the last probably year in terms of slowly growing. They're not spiking. We're not going to see a V-style job recovery. We'll see, as I've been calling it, an elongated Nike swoosh style recovery. That's what we're going to see, but it's going to take time. But believe it or not, gaming's been leading into the job creation. Now, they're not high-paying jobs, but at least those folks are off the unemployment rolls. The other bright spot is the sector called health and education, particularly the health sector. That's doing pretty well. Everything else is kind of slow to grow. There's a bit some softness in the financial services because of the people being laid off from banks and mortgage companies and things like that. But at least I can say this, private sector jobs as a group have been growing steadily for about almost a year now, month over month, year over year. What's the drag still is public sector.
And because of layoffs.
The layoffs at the local level. Mm-hmm. Not the federal, state and local, primarily local.
That's mm-hmm. true nationally, though. It
kind of mimics the national picture. Now, the difference is in the national picture, manufacturing is a much bigger component of the economy than hotel and gaming, and there are certain other, IT is a bigger So when you look at us compared to the national economy, what they call a location quotient, we don't show up that good at this point because we have a very concentrated economy.
You're listening to KUNV 91.5. This is Neon Eden. I'm your host, J. Patrick Kulik, and my co-host, as always, Tovin Lapan. Our guest today is John Restrepo. He's a local economic consultant and analyst and the former chairman of the Economic Forum. You do some work for NAIOP, right, which is the commercial real estate.
Yeah, I'm on the board.
You're on the board. Tell us, they maybe have been hit as hard or harder than residential, talking about commercial real estate.
Yeah, no, commercial, which is, and the NAIOP members are from all broad spectrums of the commercial development industry, both office, industrial, retail, lodging, facilities, hotels. And within those groups, there are engineers and architects and title company folks and economists like myself and engineers and contractors. Everyone's been hit pretty hard. Some firms have seen 56% layoffs, real layoffs, not layoffs where you don't fill a position and call it a layoff. Mm-hmm. So it's been pretty brutal. There is some stability, though, finally arriving, primarily in owner-occupied buildings, and where buildings have been bought by investors as well. The rental market is still pretty weak, particularly office. I think we have a 25% vacancy rate in office, 16 in industrial, about 10 or 12 in anchored retail.
But how does that compare to the rest of the country? Office, that's got to be some of the highest.
Yeah, it's the highest. We would probably double the national. Uh-huh. You can look at all three of those numbers and probably double them from a national average, uh-huh. I think.
It's like the SNL debacle from the early 90s in places like Dallas and Denver and Phoenix.
Well, again, the good news, it's funny, and I just thought about this as you were asking me the question. If you we look at hundreds of indicators a month, national, regional, and local economic and market indicators. And when you look at Southern Nevada, or in Nevada as a whole for that matter, and you start overlaying on top of each indicator, doesn't matter if it's gaming revenues or visitor volume or vacancy rate, you just pick the indicator. The charts all look the same. You see the big boom, the bust, and what I call the great flattening, mm-hmm. that we're going through right now. So it's not jumping up anywhere. The patient, as I like to say, is still in the hospital. He's out of the ICU, or she's mm-hmm. out of the ICU, but he's still in the hospital. So we're slowly getting better. Mm-hmm. The best that we can say right now.
And addicted to painkillers.
We're addicted to painkillers, but we're alive.
Let me ask you.
We're vertical instead of horizontal.
In the commercial sector, there's some pretty big news last week that Howard Hughes is going mm-hmm. to revive, speaking of revivals, shops at Summerlin Center.
Right, the mall. Huh?
Yeah,
the mall.
Which also is going to have office, I think. And
it was originally planned as a mixed-use development.
Right, yeah. What did you make of that?
I think that shows confidence by the new Howard Hughes Corporation, because you know that they're based out of New York now, in the growth potential of Southern Nevada, particularly in the west side of town. There is no large-scale mall in Summerlin or the mm-hmm. Northwest.
Right.
And so you've had the Galleria down here in Green Valley, and you have the Meadows Mall and
Boca Park is not really
open air, right. Really anchored shopping center. But a large scale mall like that, let's call them fortress malls because they're enclosed. We haven't seen one of those in years. I think the Galleria was the last one, and it's always been interesting that Summerlin, with one of the highest per capita or household income levels, and pretty good area in terms of housing and amenities and a preferred area, does not have it at a mall. So I think the guys from Howard Hughes are very smart, kind of conservative folks, saying, okay, we got a potential there. Remember, this is not going to open for another 3 years. So they're seeing that recovery already starting to take place. Mm-hmm. And he's seeing pent-up demand is what they're seeing.
Right. I mean, this can't be good, though, for all of the shopping centers, some more strip mall style in the interior of the city.
Depending on who those tenants are, depending on their market base, it will cannibalize some of the open air strip malls. Strip centers that you see along Charleston, particularly in north of Charleston, and that sort of thing. Yes, there will be some cannibalization. There's no doubt. Mm-hmm. It always happens, and then hopefully they get replaced. To me, and talking about the. Mentioned earlier, the Hispanic population. To me, one of the most exciting underreported stories in South Nevada in the last 24 years here has been the growth of the Hispanic economy here. I'm Hispanic by background myself. My family's from Colombia. And it's always been amazing to me how much redevelopment has occurred by both the Asian community and the Hispanic community taking over these old centers in the east side of town and the center of town. Mm-hmm. Had it not been for those ethnic groups, they'd be all sitting there empty. Mm-hmm. But there was a fascinating story, and sometimes it doesn't get reported of how important the Hispanic community particularly is to this community, and why we're fortunate not to have the same fights we're seeing in Arizona.
Mm-hmm. Why don't we have those fights? Is it the business community has not countenanced that, is unwilling?
The business community has not countenanced that.
Yeah.
No doubt about it. They have said, listen, we're not going to do this. This is crazy. These guys work in our industry, particularly the resort industry, or in construction or in retail, and it's counterproductive. I mean, it just makes no sense to do it.
And just to what you were speaking about, I think I wrote earlier this year in The Sun about the Galleria Mall specifically bringing in like community groups, mm-hmm. and the Nevada Museum of Hispanic History is now in the Galleria Mall. Yeah. It's different events. The Muévete dance, group is there, and so they're using, instead of getting the full rent they would get from a commercial vendor, they're working out deals with these community organizations and upping their traffic at the Galleria Mall, which was sitting empty for a while.
Well, and you hit the end of Toba. I don't know what would have happened to the Boulevard Mall had they stayed dependent on mainstream Anglo stores and not slowly mm-hmm. moved to being a more Hispanic-oriented enclosed mall. That's the community, the Hispanic community saved that mall.
Yeah.
And it saved a lot of commercial developers in that part of town.
Mm-hmm. Let's shift downtown. A lot of excitement about Zappos moving mm-hmm. downtown. There does seem to be, back on your expertise here in commercial development,
right.
A lack of usable buildings and just a lack of everything at the moment. Give me your thoughts on downtown.
We do a lot of work for the city of Las Vegas, and they're a pretty important client of ours. And I think they're doing as much possible as they can right now in terms of changing downtown. There are, as you know from some of the articles you've read, there are some infrastructure barriers. You got that train station, the railroad tracks, rather,
mm-hmm.
going through downtown. And a lot of the investments so far has been public-private, or mostly public infrastructure investment, as opposed to private investment. It takes a long time to redevelop downtown areas. This is always the challenge here. We saw this in Southern Nevada during the boom. We try and create environments in casinos
mm-hmm.
that mimic other environments from other parts of the world. We think we can do the same thing in everything. It was tried here at the District.
Mm-hmm.
We tried it in Green Valley. We tried it in different other places. These things happen organically, and they take a long time. So everything's moving in the right direction. We've had a pretty compatible city council who have worked together on this, the cohesive in that regard. The one thing that's missing, and I've encouraged this to the city that they think about doing, they need, if they want residential population growth downtown to kind of spike, if you want to call it that, or accelerate, they need a small supermarket downtown. It could be what's the new one? Sprouts,
uh-huh.
which is Sunflower. It could be a neighborhood market by
Trader Joe's.
Joe's, a neighborhood market by Walmart, something. And they may have to subsidize it. No one likes to hear this. I know that my free market friend thinks that the market takes care of all problems. There may be some subsidization on rent or building the facility or utilities or something to get to incentivize someone to come down there and take a location. That alone will have a huge, in my opinion, impact on promoting residential living downtown.
Mm-hmm.
That's the biggest challenge. Everyone you talk to who lives downtown, they love it for a variety of reasons, but the constant complaint is the quality of the grocery store.
I live downtown, and I totally agree. We need a grocery store. And and the city does have programs where they help with signage or just beautification of buildings, things like that. There are grant programs the city already has in place for those types of things.
Well, but they don't do that. Investing in a supermarket is not a new concept. The master plan developers have been using it for years in kind of more extra, ex-urban type of master plan areas where they say, listen, we're just starting this master plan community, waiting for the rooftops to come. We're going to have to fund the subsidize the Smiths or Vons, or they'll need something bigger.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll do that for X number of years just to get them in there.
Right. Well, the city spent $30 million to build a parking garage underneath the Neonopolis.
Mm-hmm.
So
you would think, right?
Right. Yeah. So maybe they could put the grocery store in the Neonopolis garage.
you may not want to be an urban planner.
Has anyone ever parked in
underground shopping? You say you again. You have to think
like,
outside the box.
It's like a root cellar. Mm-hmm. It would keep the food fresh.
That's true. As long as it's mushrooms and potatoes and salad. Yeah. Other than that, I'm not sure.
Root vegetables.
Right.
I actually wrote about Neonopolis recently.
Yeah.
That's an interesting project that has had quite a checkered past, but
right.
all of a sudden it seems like it's actually going to be something. Are you still skeptical?
No, I think it's slow. I think time has caught up with it. I think you're right. I think it was not, in my opinion, particularly well thought out years ago, and what the feasibility studies, if you want to call it that were done for it. But I think
because it was going to be like a mall.
It's going to be a mall. It was going to it's going to be a whole thing, and it struggled from day one. Again, the downtown had an image problem for a long time that penalized it. You didn't have the residential base downtown, so things have now evolved to the point where something like that becomes supportive. And we can't underestimate. And I'm not trying to sound like a cheerleader here because that's not my nature. How important Zappos is to downtown to continue if they put all the investments in. I would encourage Tony Shea with the $350 million he's talked about for downtown. Why doesn't he participate with the city in building that grocery store?
Right. I mean, he lives downtown. He lives downtown. He'll help him out too, right?
So, yeah, there's a lot going on downtown. It's probably the most exciting thing happening in the Valley right now, in my opinion, is kind of the renaissance of downtown. Mm-hmm. As long as it's going to take, at least it's heading in much faster than I would have thought at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a good thing.
Let's change topics slightly. This week there's a big mining convention in town.
Yeah.
Gold mining has become a very controversial subject in Nevada the past year, a few years, because the price of gold has soared, and people have noted the favorable tax treatment that has been afforded to the industry. You're the chairman of a kind of blue ribbon panel on mining and mining oversight. Tell us about that work you've done for that panel.
Yeah, that panel, is the official name is the Nevada Mining Oversight and Accountability Commission. It was the result of the last legislative session. It was a bill pushed through or promoted or sponsored, I should say, probably by Senator Stephen Horsford. And it's to bring an outside group of business folks to, and environmentalists for that matter, to oversee on an advisory basis what is mining paying its fair share of taxes. Is it mining paying its taxes? It should be paying based on the law. Mm-hmm. How is it operating in terms of safety, the industry? How is it operating in terms of Nevada environmental regulations? So we've had 4 meetings so far. This is we're in the year one of the 3 meetings. I can't remember. In fact, we're meeting tomorrow. I have to leave tomorrow for Carson City early in the morning. It's interesting. I've learned a lot about the mining industry. It's funny, when the governor's office called and appointed me to that, I said, you know, I don't know anything about mining. And they said, well,
it's not really a Southern Nevada thing.
It's not Southern. Well, although there is gypsum mining here,
right?
And moly mining.
I mean, gold mining.
Gold mining.
Yeah.
But she said, you know, you showed your independence and objectivity and openness on the economic forum, and we that's what we want to see with you here. So I was kind of honored to do that. But we have a good group of folks on the mining commission with me. We ask a lot of hard questions. I have a very open policy. The environmental community speaks as long as they need to. The mining guys get to speak. The safety folks get to speak. And so far, so good. With the most interesting part of it, there seem to have been a lot of myths about the miners cheating on their taxes, things like that. Now they've gone through their audits. They're mostly done with the major audits of the big companies, Barrick Gold and Newmont are the biggest.
Because they hadn't been audited.
They hadn't been audited for a while. Right. They were self-reporting, and nothing was found of any substance. There was some... a couple of $1 million, you know, that they needed. It was more interpretive whether you could take the deduction or not, but not massive tax cheating. Oh, it's good. On the safety side, they're meeting all the federal regs, all the Nevada regs, which we don't believe a little tougher than the federal regs in terms of mining safety. That's good. And on the environmental side, so far they seem to be doing everything they're supposed to according to the law. You know, there's debates whether the law is too easy or they're not easy enough. But remember, they had to go through EPA as well as the state EPA, the U.S. and the state EPA. So I think so far it's going well. Now, what you can argue, and this is not our job on the commission to discuss this, is the mining tax fair. That's up to the legislature and their negotiations.
Will you make policy recommendations?
We don't make policy recommendations.
Okay.
No. We just do advisory on the accounting side, on the safety side, and on the environmental side, but not policy in terms of the financial policy
okay.
recommendations.
John Restrepo, former chair of the Economic Forum and the CEO of his consulting firm, we want to thank him for being here today. My co-host is Tovin LePan. Our producer is Steven Zeller. You've been listening to Neon Eden on KUNV 91.5. See you next week.